Hey there, foreigners! This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrant. Today's guest is a thought leader in marketing, and he's especially good at marketing for Latino community, which has done for 13 years for other corporates. He is now helping other companies do the same through his marketing consulting company, Marketalo. He is Arturo Nava. He's also has a podcast where he interviews Latino, Latina, and Latin-inspired entrepreneurs. He also wrote a book on the same topic, which went on to become an Amazon bestseller. Arturo, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Hey, thank you very much for inviting me on the show, Rohit. I'm really grateful that you have me on to tell my story and to help inspire other immigrants out there that might get inspired, might benefit from what we talk today.
Yeah, absolutely. I share the same passion as you of inspiring immigrant entrepreneurs. And the first thing that I would hear from other people is, how did they get started, right? Like, take me all the way back to 1999 when you first came to the US. What was it like for you? Why did you come here?
Yeah, well, actually, since I was around 12 years old, I had a dream of coming to the U.S. And not only to the U.S., I wanted to come to Harvard. One day, my dad brought a duffel bag from Boston, from Harvard, because he used to travel a lot. He was a computer executive. He worked at Honeywell Bull in Mexico. And I told my dad, you know, one day I want to go to the United States, and I want to go to study there, and I want to go study to Harvard, just because it seemed like, you know, that would be like an amazing goal that I could potentially put myself as, you know, like something that seems like maybe unreachable. But I thought, you know what, I want to do this, and I told my dad at that age, and then 14 years later, that dream became true because I just put. Really put a lot of focus into it, a lot of work into it, and I really had a mission of trying to get a better life, right? And yeah. Many of us immigrants that have come to the United States do so because we feel that we can have a better life here in the United States than what we had before. So in Mexico, there were a number of things I never really liked about the system. There's more oligarchic. There's there's less of an equal opportunity, if you will. So what I love about this country is that there's equal opportunity in anybody that is willing to work hard and has gumption and talent can make it as far as they want. So that's how it all started.
Yeah. And so got an admission into Harvard, right? And
yes.
You mentioned on your about page on your website that fortunately I got a scholarship so that I could come. Why was that important to you?
Yeah, well, I wasn't wealthy. Like I came from a middle class background in Mexico, which from the US standpoint, it's not wealthy at all, right? Yeah. I mean, so I couldn't have paid for it myself.
Okay.
I couldn't have paid for it myself. So that's why I applied for scholarships, and actually got a scholarship from the Mexican government to come to the United States to study, and it was my golden dream come true.
Yeah. So one thing you did on your Harvard interview, which I thought was very interesting, I read this in your book again, is you got a phone interview, but from Harvard, and you didn't settle for a phone interview. What did you do?
Yeah, actually, they called me and they say, "Hey, you had a phone interview," and I said, "Hey, that's awesome, but I would like to go in person," because I knew that if I was going to go there in person, first of all, I would impress them that I would, you know, basically just go and travel there and show a lot of desire, right? And then secondly, I knew that I would perform much better in person because in person you have the body language and I could communicate my passion for it and my desire much better. So I said, "Hey, why not? You know, I'll tell you what, next week I can, you know, get on a plane. I'll go to Boston.
And did you pay for it yourself for the flight?
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah. So that is what is very impressive as a 20-something-year-old paying from your pocket, flying from Mexico for what could have just been a phone interview. That is extreme drive.
Well, but you know what? Sometimes in life, you have big opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And the upside of that opportunity is huge. Downside, you know, it's $500, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I would have gone, maybe I wouldn't have gotten in, and I've lost $500. But at least I would have tried, and I would have been at peace with myself that I say, you know, I did everything I could to get into Harvard. So I couldn't have forgiven myself if I just settled for a phone interview and maybe I didn't get in. I said, I'm going to put everything in it, like everything I have in my being. I'm gonna put everything in that's in me to go to Harvard to get accepted, and I did. Like I practiced like mad. I talked to a number of alumni so that I could get really get a sense of what it took to get to have a great interview, and I put a lot of passion into it. And I was not gonna let anything get in my way of getting that golden ticket to Harvard Business School. And thank God I did it. I was, you know, better prepared than any time in my life. And I think I did a great job. And then 2 weeks later, I got that fat envelope and I went to UPS, I remember, before it closed, because I got the notice at home. And then I rushed to the UPS office. And just before it closed, they gave me about a fat envelope. And it was wonderful. So I really like, I would advise anybody that when in life you have a big opportunity and you really want it, don't skimp. Mm-hmm. Do everything in your power to try to crush it.
Yeah, that's a great lesson. So you went to Harvard and I'm sure you met amazing people at Harvard. Just the intellect of the people that come there is
yes.
brilliant, right? And right after Harvard, you founded a company which did not do that well. And
yes.
What was it like putting everything? And I'm sure with all your personality that you explained so far, you put everything into your company at that time. What was it like to fail?
Well, it was a humbling experience. You know, any entrepreneur that's listening that has not succeeded before can probably relate to this. Like, I mean, sometimes things don't work out, and for many reasons, right? And in my case, it was because I pursued an idea that it was before its time, and I was very, very green, and I didn't really validate.
What was the idea?
It was itradefood.com. It was a B2B marketplace for international trade of frozen fruits and vegetables between Mexico and the U.S., but I didn't validate it before going all in. And mm-hmm. before investing a lot of my time, money, I raised investment dollars and so forth. So it was humbling because I thought that I could do it, I could be successful at it, but I found out that, you know, I really hadn't done what I should do, which is make sure that there's a business there, which is very elemental, but a lot of people at that moment make the same mistake. And it was dot-com years where, you know, you thought that anything would go online would work, but it didn't. So it was humbling.
So you started the company right after school, right? And right after school, you came from Mexico. So what visa allowed you to do that at that time?
Well, I was on a student visa.
During your company also?
And then I actually got married.
Oh, okay.
Basically probably about 6 months after I graduated, I got married to an American citizen, and that allowed me to apply for the residency. So it allowed me to stay. Yes,
which helped you with your starting your company as well. The reason I ask is that is one of the biggest questions I get from listeners of the show. What visa type? And I'm doing an extended interview with a lawyer to address those concerns. And then you moved on to marketing, right? And especially, I was very interested in the niche that you chose for marketing. Actually, I would let you describe it yourself. What is, so after your failure or after the startup experience was over, you went into the corporate world doing marketing. What sort of marketing did you do?
Yeah, I went straight to Procter & Gamble, to consumer product goods marketing. I worked there with a number of brands on Bounce, on the Tide & Downy, Dry Ale. So really learning the basics of marketing. I think that Procter & Gamble has probably one of the best schools as it relates to teaching you the basics.
For marketing or for everything?
For marketing.
For marketing, for, okay.
The basics of marketing, of, okay. of brand. And I would say, I would qualify that as brand building. Brand build, because very different. Marketing can be taken very tactically, but brand building is about how you bring value to a brand, how you build the brand, and they're the masters at that. So,
so it's the difference between how do you generate more leads for a product versus how do I make this a household name?
Exactly. Yeah, the brand value is it's what differentiates your offering from a commodity. So really that's where the value lies in the brand always. So I really learned that discipline very, very well. And then I went to a Coors Brewing Company, worked on Coors Light for a number of years. And that's when I got into Latino marketing, mm-hmm. into helping them grow in the Latino market. And I discovered my passion for the Latino community there. And
How did you bump into it? It's like, did someone come to you and ask you, are you interested in doing this? Like, how did that evolve?
Yeah, they recruited me. They recruited me for the job, for the Coors Light job. So it was through
A specific Latino marketing job that you got at Coors Light already.
Yes. Actually, okay. Yeah, Ken Hunter recruited me for a Coors Light job focused on the Latino market.
Okay. Got it. And
so I never had done Latino marketing before, but I thought, hey, what a great opportunity. I always like beer. It's a category I'm very familiar with and I understand very well. And in the Latino market, what better to help other people out in my community and to market to my community? And so that was awesome because that really opened the door to the Latino community here in the U.S. And that that really started – that's when I started my career as a Latino marketer and the Coors Light experience. And then really it's all about like doing something you love and you have passion for and – you know, being a marketer, you know, I enjoyed it. It's great. But then pairing that with serving a market that you have a lot of passion for, that you really understand well, makes all the difference in the world. So that's where I decided to try to focus as much as possible and become an expert in this market. Because as you know, the more you become an expert at something very specific, but that that provides a lot of value to people, the more valuable you become in the marketplace.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what is Si Se Puede?
The what? Si Se Puede. Yeah. Si Se Puede means...
You said it much better than I did, but...
Yeah, the Si Se Puede, it means it is possible. It is a saying that we have in many Latin countries, and particularly in Mexico, and actually... It's something that also here in the Latino movement in the U.S. it has been heard many, many times, which is really a call to action that reminds us that we can, that it is possible to achieve our dreams despite an apparent disadvantage because we're not from this country, because we're immigrants, because we might be the underdog. Si Se Puede brings it all to life. So it's a very motivational type of saying. So it's in the book because actually a lot of the people that I interviewed in my podcast and for the book have brought it up and yes. And it resonates deeply with our people.
So the reason I asked about that was you had a very successful Hispanic marketing career, right? But you were not like satisfied with that, right? You took the plunge into doing something more. But what got you started with taking another leap at entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so basically I started Logra to Dream. Logra to Dream means achieve your dream in Spanglish. So it's like a combination of English and Spanish, but that's a kind of our dialect for Latinos in the U.S., for bicultural Latinos in the U.S. So I started that in April 2014. And I did that because I realized that in my marketing career, I was selling stuff or your marketing stuff to your community, but I wasn't really helping. I wasn't really helping people out with what they most needed with. And I realized that I had an obligation and a duty to help out, because of I was in a privileged position, and I really enjoyed interacting with the community, and I thought, hey, I want to really help all of the people that came to this country or were born in this country, have a Latino heritage, and are trying to be successful like me, right? But face a number of barriers and can't find the way many times, and can't find mentors, or can't find inspiration, or can't find business advice like I did, or can't find a roadmap like I did. And I said, well, I need to do something to help these people. And I had wanted to write a book like many years ago, and I had this idea about really precisely helping document the immigrant Latino experience here. And it really kind of resonated deeply with my soul, really. Like, it's something that really I was really got inspired by and motivated by. And that's when I decided, well, you know, I've been wanting to help my people all along. I haven't done it. I wanted to write a book. I haven't done it. But then I discovered podcasting. I started listening to John Lee Dumas, Entrepreneur on Fire, and a number of other podcasts, Pat Flynn, Michael O'Neill, you name it, like a number of great podcasts. And I learned so much from podcasting in terms of business, entrepreneurship. So I was really inspired. And I said, well, why don't I start a podcast? And
Do you remember the day you registered your domain?
It was 2014.
What happened that day? I don't care much about the date as such, but what happened that day you registered the domain?
Well, you know, actually before registering the domain, I mean, I had the idea, but I was looking for a name. And so I kind of was brainstorming, and I think I was on a plane. And I just, you know, scribbled some ideas and so forth. And I said, well, what is it? What's the aspiration of all of us here in this country? And I said, well, it's about achieving a dream, right? It's all about the American dream. And I said, okay, well, how about logra tu sueño, right? That it's logra in Spanish. Like, okay, yeah, it sounds good. And then like something like a light bulb went off and said, okay, why don't I call it logra tu, which is achieve your, and then, but the dream, it's got to be in English, because the dream is in America. Where we come from is from our country, from our culture. So logra tu has to be in Spanish, and dream has to be in English, because that's where we're going. It's kind of where we come from and where we're going, and that's encapsulates the our biggest aspiration for this community in this country. So I said, hey, that's a great brand. That's a great name. I could build a brand around it, and I registered as soon as I could.
Yeah. And you did it on the flight, this idea. And this also connects back with what you wrote in your book, where you said, your habits may be American, but your heart is Hispanic.
Yes. Right? Yes, that's correct. And I found that to be true for probably all of the Latinos and Latinas that I've met in this country, which is we keep our heart is always Latino, because that's where we come from. We have deep roots with our culture, because we either came here with a lot of struggle, but we keep our culture because there's so many rich things and wonderful things about our culture that we don't just want to throw it away. We want to embrace it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of our base, you know. And even for people that have come here, their parents, through a lot of struggle, through a lot of hard work, had come here and given people an education, had given them like a future in this country. So even the people that are here, they're very grateful for their parents. And so that also parlays into like a great appreciation of the culture and a great love of our culture, of our food, of our people. I mean, it's just wonderful. It's very, very rich. And so I'm always have a Latino heart, but then in America, you got to think like an American to be successful here. So otherwise, you won't survive. So
and you're talking about like being individual and equality and things like that. The American
values. and also like you know, the entrepreneurialism, the action orientation, the business orientation that you have here. The fact this is a market, it's a very efficient market. So you got to really be the best you can to be successful here. So that's kind of what I encapsulate kind of as the mindset and the soul of the Latino.
Yeah, so bringing the best of both worlds yes. together, right? So that's valid. So one of the other things that you mentioned in taking the plunge into either podcasting or into your second entrepreneurial venture, Marketalo, you mentioned that you did it because there were many other moments in your life where you lost it all and had to start over, right? That kind of gave you, you lost your fear in a way, right? Like, what was one such moment?
Well, when I did my first entrepreneurial venture, I lost everything. Like, I trade food. Like, I came right out of school. I didn't have a salary for 6 months.
But what was you? That happened all the way in 2001, right? So what was different in 2012 that you took the plunge into starting your own company, having a cushy corporate job and quitting it?
Well, I mean, actually, I got laid off from Motorola, okay. And that's also in the book.
Yeah.
So that was a catalyst, obviously, to try to find, you know, really kind of what I really wanted to do. So that's where I started Marketalo, and then I started Logra to Dream, and now also I also lead the marketing department for Nuestro Queso,
yeah.
which is like a Hispanic dairy company here in Chicago. But it was kind of like going back to my roots, right? Going back to what I do best, which is really focusing on this community. So actually in the book, there's a chapter that's called Master the One Thread that you can do better than anybody else.
Yeah.
The one thread, not the one thing, but the one thread. So my one thread is really being an author, a marketer, a podcast, a content creator in the Latino world, right? And that's the Latino world is kind of what ties everything together. And so that's, you know, when I came back, you know, when I got laid off, I went back into really my core competency, what I had more passion for, what I did better. And that has led me to where I'm tonight, today, you know, that, you know, I have a podcast that's focused on the Latino market, that the Logra to Dream. I have a best-selling book that is Logra to Dream, that's also focused on helping the Latino community. And I help a company win in the Latino market from the marketing standpoint, from the business standpoint. So that it all ties together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of taking the plunge, I think that you always have to really go to where you can add more value, because the marketplace has one simple rule, and that rule is it rewards the creators of value. And sometimes you can't create value on stuff that you're not good at, mm-hmm. and that you're not unique at. So, for example, another chapter of the book is bring your unique value to the marketplace. We all have unique value because nobody's like us. Nobody has the same passions, the same interests, the same experience, the same skills like we do. So if we're smart and we're able to find differentiation in what we do, in our skills, in our careers, in a niche, then we can become the best at it with a lot of practice, and we can achieve mastery at in that domain. And that's how we can really become the best at in any field.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very, very important to try to look for in your career, because otherwise then you know you're not differentiated. So you can't really achieve a high level of success. I mean, you can have a job that pays you enough to live on and stuff, but you can't really get to a high level of success.
Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned while you were saying that is not everyone had the support that you had, and not everyone had the coaching that you had, and not everyone knew what you knew, right? And you wanted to help these people. How did you get all this help and support?
So how did I help people? Or
no, how did you get help and support, by which you thought was missing from other people?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, I did get some support, but I was also lacking some of it. So it wasn't like I had everything, but I was just in a privileged position because I had a great job at that point before I started Looking at Your Dream. You know, I had a great education.
So who taught you things specifically, people-wise?
The first person who taught me how to succeed in life was my dad. My dad, he was a great man. He's not with us. He passed away actually in 2003. But he taught me so many things about life, and a couple of things that really resonated with me were, one was like, always keep the fire in your belly burning so you can achieve your dream. And the other piece of advice that he gave me was, when you have a big goal or any goal that you want to achieve in life, just break it down. Break it down to its small parts and achieve those small components, and then you move on to the next one. But really, my dad inspired me to try to be as successful as I could, to not settle. He was a very successful computer executive in Mexico, and he was a very wise man, very intelligent man. He achieved all the goals he set for himself in his life. So he inspired me, and he gave me the example of how to be successful. So I learned a lot from him, and that helped me get started. Then I had a good, really good mentor in college. It was a professor who helped me a lot, who mentored me on how to be successful in my career, and how to how to try to go to study to the U.S. and stuff like that. And then when I came to the United States, I had a really good mentor also at Coors. A person had a lot of experience there in the company who helped me learn the craft of Latino marketing and gave me a lot of really wise advice. So,
Do you have a mentor now?
I have a couple of mentors that I tap into, and I try to surround myself with great people that can inspire me, that can help me, but that also I can help too, right? So it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
So definitely a mentor is very, very important, and this is another chapter in the book, which is get mentored, because mentoring is one of the key things that's missing in the Latino community. Unfortunately, many people don't have the examples or role models close to them, or have access to people that can teach them and show them the way of how to be successful. And what that causes is that then, many young people only can believe in what they see around them. So if they don't see many successful people around them, then they think they can only get to that limit, right? They think they can't overcome, they can't go further. And so what a role model does that has gone further than them is show them that it is possible. Yeah. And then the mentoring is so important, because then, really mentoring saves years of your life in terms of like hitting yourself against the wall. Yeah. And many times in my life, I did that, right? I hit my head against the wall because I didn't have enough mentorship. And so really getting mentored is key. Getting access to people that are ahead of you in life and in business or in your career, so that you can learn from them, and basically you can learn from their mistakes. Yeah. So you don't have to make the mistakes, because mistakes are costly. And so that's a very, very important. So I had a little bit of an advantage. But
What is one mistake that you avoided because a mentor told you that it's not a good idea?
For example, like when I started at Coors, I learned so many things in terms of how to navigate corporate environments that I didn't before, because I always been kind of rebellious and more of like an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so, he taught me a lot about how to approach different situations, how to approach different people in a way that probably wasn't as direct as I would have liked, but was more effective in the corporate environment to get what I wanted.
How about in the entrepreneurial life, either with podcasting or in Marketalo, is there anything that you would have done wrongly because a mentor saved you?
Well, actually, for when I started the podcast, I joined John Lee Dumas' Mastermind, mm-hmm. which is Fire Nation Elite, which is composed of about 100 entrepreneurs, very successful entrepreneurs, and obviously John. And they just taught me how to start a podcast, how to succeed in the podcasting world and in the online entrepreneurial world, and what kind of are the rules of the road, right? Which is, it's all about giving. It's all about helping other people. It's all about getting into action. It's all about just getting it done and not having to have everything perfect, but just having an idea and just getting it done and helping other people, because if you help other people, people will help you. So I learned a lot about from all this group, which probably saved me a lot of time, because if I would have done it alone, first of all, I didn't know where to start. I probably would have read a book or two, and then they inspired me and they helped me and they motivated me, and I learned from them. I also contributed to them, and that community was so valuable to me because it just made it all faster, easier, crystallized. What I needed to do to succeed. And I did it in 3 months, right? So that saved me a lot of time and heartburn. And then I built some relationships that have helped me through my book and are helping me succeed now too. So it's about planting the seeds and learning the value of a community when you have a big goal and you don't know where to start. So so that those were very, very valuable lessons for me.
Sure. So when I look at your career or what you did back in 2001, you had a lot of energy and a lot of things that you did. And when I look at what you're doing now with your startup or with your podcast, it's very channelized, it's very focused, and it's almost at a different plane, right? And you wrote about this as well, and you said the 13 years in between is your journey in finding yourself.
Yes.
Right? And how can someone shortcut that process? I don't want to take 13 years to find myself, you know? I want to do it in maybe 1 year or lesser. So what were some of the important things for you that helped you learn about yourself that made this shift happen?
Well, I mean, sometimes it takes hard times to learn about yourself or to give you a kick, or for life to give you a kick in the pants to really inspire you to go after what you really need to be doing, right? Because sometimes, you know, you can get comfortable, right? You can get comfortable in a job, you can get comfortable in a situation. And in my case, you know, it was really two big milestones that helped me wake up and helped me get into the path that I needed to get in. One was my dad dying in 2003, and I realized, you know, life is short. I don't have as much time as I think I have, and I better get going with what I want to achieve or what I do in this life, because I mean, you really can't just get comfortable, right? And because life can go out any point, you know, who knows, you can truck and run over you tomorrow, right? And then the other piece was when I divorced. And, you know, that would change my life radically. It was another wake up point. Actually, I write about it in the book too, where it's oh my God, all of a sudden, from one day to another, your life can change radically. So those two situations taught me that you can't take anything for granted, and that in order to be really happy and successful, you need to really go after what your soul really wants you to express in this lifetime, and that really pushed me to go where I am today, and I'm glad I did it, because now, you know, I've accomplished a lot, and I I wrote the book. I always wanted to write a book, and it's been very successful. Number one in Amazon, a number of categories. I never thought I could get to that level. Have a successful podcast. You know, I have my two great kids that I love. I have, you know, in business, I'm doing really, really well. And so it comes all together, right?
Yeah. So one thing I was looking at, I was on the Wayback Machine on the internet, and I was looking at the past snapshots of your website, and the speaking tab was not there earlier, right? And now it is. So I'm guessing,
yes.
Is it as a result of the podcast that you got into speaking? Can you tell me more about that?
Well, actually, I hadn't put it. I wanted to put it in like before, but I hadn't gotten around to it. But
you were always speaking on the side, even when you started.
Yeah, I've been speaking for a while now, for probably almost like a year, and I've been doing a number of different. So, for example, I was at Hispanicize. I spoke there. That's the number one conference for the Latino world. I just spoke at a conference in New York called Engage Hispanic for Media Post, mm-hmm. A panel on social media on the Latino market. But I also go to speak to schools. For example, here in Chicago, I go speak to the kids to inspire them. Mm-hmm. And so I do a lot of that too. So
did all the speaking opportunities come to you as a result of podcasting, or would it have happened other ways too?
You know what? It started to happen after I started my podcast. So,
okay.
So I think there's a correlation there.
Okay.
Yes, I think there's a correlation, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And
how,
now that
how did it help you? Is it for people to discover you, or I'm curious to know.
Well, I mean, it builds your brand, right?
Yeah.
Like when you have a podcast, and you might know this now as a podcaster, it puts you on another level.
Yeah.
When you have a podcast and you're interviewing a lot of great people, and you have a platform that helps you a lot.
So did someone reach out to you for your first speaking opportunity?
Yes. Yes. Some people reached out to me
By listening to you on the podcast, I guess.
By a connection that was made through the podcast by
really?
Somebody that I interviewed on the podcast, who then invited me to speak. But really it positions you as an expert,
mm-hmm.
right? As an expert in your field, almost instantly, really, and so that helps you attract many opportunities and get to know a lot of people in your domain that can help you get a lot of opportunities. And then on other opportunities, I kind of pushed for it and I got them, right? And so there's some that have come to me and others that I pushed for.
You were able to push only because your brand, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Yes, because of the platform. Exactly.
Platform. Okay.
Exactly. You know, because frankly, I mean, there's how many Latino marketers are there? There's a number of Latino marketers in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Many very successful. But how many Latino marketers are out there that have a very successful platform? How many Latino marketers out there that have a platform and a best-selling book
mm-hmm.
that's focused on helping the community? Very, very few.
Yeah.
So that's how you differentiate yourself when you go above and beyond and you build a platform that can help people, but also helps you and helps you build your brand.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is one thing that I wanted to ask you about, right? So you've been podcasting and have been very successful at it. So what kind of helped you grow your podcast from a content out there to something which matters to people, right? So how did that transition happen? And what are the few things which helped you on this way?
Well, the first thing that helped me a lot was to make it to the new and noteworthy
mm-hmm.
List on iTunes, which it put me basically on, I don't know if many people are familiar with the new and noteworthy list on iTunes, but it puts you on the favorites, on the top 100 favorites on a number of categories. You can choose up to three categories on iTunes in the rankings. So people that are just discovering podcasts or looking for a podcast, they go on favorites and they can find you.
Yeah.
So you get exposure to literally millions of people that way. So that's true. Basically, I put a lot of effort into doing a great show with great guests that could create a lot of value for people. So for great product number one. Then getting great reviews So I contacted a lot of my people in my network, friends, colleagues, family, etc., to give me reviews, because that helps you get up in the rankings. Mm-hmm. And then downloads, right? So then that's what the rubber meets road, that people like it, they download your podcast, and then it goes up in the rankings. So I was able to do that, and so I got off to a great start. And then after that, I continued getting great guests on board, and then people started recommending other people to be on the show. So now, actually, I don't have to go and get guests. All the guests come to me now. Like, all people recommend me, and frankly, it's sometimes overwhelming. Sometimes it's like, you know, I can't manage that, you know, so many requests and people and so forth. And but then that's what happens when you have great content out there. And then I was very focused on sharing it on social media and being out there. And then I went to Hispanicize as a speaker, so that gave me a lot of recognition in the Latino world. And I've made a lot of great relationship with other podcasters or Latino podcasters, and we help each other out. We share each other's content. And now with the book and, you know, featuring really all these great stories of all these great, so it's really the book, and I haven't said the subtitle, and I should. It's Logra Tu Dream, How 50 Successful Latinos and Latinas Turned Their Dreams into Reality. So it's really, it synthesizes 12 proven principles of success for Latinos in America, and it's based on 50 stories of 50 people who are very successful in different walks of life, from entrepreneurs to people in the White House to community leaders to authors, you name it. Mm-hmm. And so making building relationships with all these influential people also have helped the platform grow and expand, because they share it with their networks, and so that just creates a lot of momentum. And so the book, it's about really, it captures the 12 proven principles of success from 50 of the most successful Latinos and Latinas in America. So we share their stories, and we synthesize like into these principles of how they did it, right? Of how they achieved the success they have. And these are people from all walks of life, from the entrepreneurial world, in tech and real estate, you name it, but also community leaders, also people from the White House, authors. So it really from all walks of life. Yeah. And
for the part of your book, or even early on your show, you have amazing people on, right? So you mentioned about the process of how people are coming to you. So you have a platform, you build audience with great content, and you getting more great content in return through other people reaching out to you. But when you first started, how did you get hold of all these thought leaders in various industries?
I just reached out, like, you know, upfront. I knew some people, right, mm-hmm. that were prominent, so I got those people on first. Somewhere like, so I had like a classmate from business school, very successful, and a couple other people that I've known through my life and career. So I got those on first. And then once I got out there and once it started to become successful, then all of a sudden I could go to other people and say, hey, you know what? I have this podcast. It's a new worth in iTunes. It's been successful. I had these other successful people on. Would you like to be on it? And most people said yes. Because they saw that, you know, this was a real platform, you know, that was having an impact. And really, at the time, there was nothing like it. And there were other successful people. So it was really about social proof, which is another very, very important principle in building a platform, to build social proof up front, because you can leverage that to get to the next level, to get more great people on the show.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit about your interviewing process? How do you go about creating an interesting interview? Actually, before you say that, what do you think about how this went? Because you're an interviewer as well, I would like to get your feedback on air. What do you think?
That's great. I think you do a great job. I think you, you're very prepared. You, I think you have anticipated a number of the key points that are worth talking about through reading the book, through listening to the podcast, through being familiar with my story. So you're doing a great job. I think that you're...
Anything that I can do better?
I know. I mean, I think that one thing that I learned that helped me a lot mm-hmm. was to get less structured.
Okay.
Less structured as I went on. At first, I was very structured because I was just kind of like learning how to do it. But then I realized that with less structure, then you can follow a stream of conversation that becomes very interesting. Yeah. So let's say that your game plan, you say, you know, I want to talk about these four or five things that you know are important. But then all of a sudden something else comes up that's even more interesting to the audience and to you. And so like you know, you're in a dinner party, right? And also you start talking about something, but then a very interesting topic comes up, and then everybody is very, very engaged in that conversation all of a sudden. So I learned to let it flow. You know, like if we're in great conversation, even if it's not planned, I would just go with the flow and have more of an informal conversation wherever it led. And so that made it easier to have more impactful moments.
But do you also do background research?
I do some background research. Okay. Not too much.
Okay.
Because I find that if I know too much, then I might not make as many interesting questions as if I just know a little but I want to learn more. Mm-hmm. So I do some research, but not a lot.
Yeah, okay. It reminds me of this, of Larry King. He goes with no research, right? I believe. Or no, he's not the one. There's another guy who goes with no research at all. He wants to bring the curiosity of a kid, but... anyways, so yeah, thanks for that feedback. That is, yeah, I'm trying to balance between the two, you know, structure versus impromptuness, right? And so you have the podcast, the book, and you have a full-time job and starting a company, right? Like you have your own company as well. How do you keep all of the, and then you have two kids that you are very close to as well. So how do you manage it all time-wise?
You know, what I try to do is, as before we got on the show, I mentioned we talked about my morning routine. So I try to cut out TV. So I don't watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a lot of time if you don't watch TV. Because then I can wake up early. I have my morning routine. I do meditation and affirmations, and I exercise, and I read a little bit. And then I, you know, for example, during when the writing of the book, I would write the book for a half an hour every single day, as much as I could. And then after work, I also use the time after work to devote to my podcast and the book and everything else. So it's really just finding the time that sometimes we waste in stuff that doesn't add value to our lives, like watching TV.
Yeah.
So you'll be surprised and amazed by how much time you can find, because many people told me, hey, how much time did you spend writing a book?
Yeah.
I told them it's 6 months. 6 months. And I was able to do it with all my obligations by just finding that time. And and it's really just about really making every second count.
And keeping it consistent, right? Like yours.
And being consistent and being motivated and doing something that you really enjoy, because otherwise you run out of gas if that's not the case. And then the other piece is the power of the one thread. You know what? Because being in the Latino market in what I do in the business and the book and the podcast has huge synergies. Then what I learn, the people I meet, the ideas that I have. So it's all about the Latino world, the Latino market. So it becomes very, very easy to make efficiencies across the board. So I meet somebody, you know, at a function of my company, and then that might be a guest for the podcast, and then that becomes something for the book, you know, and mm-hmm. it all comes together. So look for efficiencies too.
Got it. Yeah. Synergies between different works that you're doing, right? Yeah, I'm just starting to realize that I could do it, and I have to exploit more about it. And one thing that you mentioned while you're saying about time efficiency is affirmations in the morning. And I just started to do them about a month ago, and I'm still not completely bought in. Is there an affirmation that you did in the past that actually came true for you? Very quickly.
Yeah, well, actually, one affirmation was become a best-selling author.
Yeah.
And that became true.
Okay.
And, you know, that was, and so that was like something that I never thought it could really happen, and it became true. And it was just to say, okay, I'm writing this book, and I'm going to be an Amazon bestselling author. Hmm. And by the way, a number one bestselling author, not just bestselling.
Pardon my ignorance, but what does number one bestselling mean on Amazon? What?
So that means that in a category, and there's a number of categories in Amazon, you get to number one.
I mean, what does it number one mean? Like, you have the most number of downloads of all the books, or is it the rate?
You get number one in the ranking.
In the reviews.
In the ranking.
Ranking. And how does that ranking
based?
Is based on like total purchases or total reviews?
It's an algorithm.
Okay.
Who knows what's in the algorithm, but it's a combination of downloads and reviews.
I see.
And also it's a combination of how, you know, I think it has an acceleration metric too, in terms of when you first start, how many people download and review in a short time.
Yeah, the rate at which you are attracting new people, new reviews, new downloads, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So what is next for you and for Logra to Dream?
So yeah, the next step is I'm actually thinking through it right now, but I want to make it into a platform that offers even more value to my audience. So I'm thinking about a course, an online course, and a mastermind. And a number of people actually have already reached out with interest in joining a Logra to Dream mastermind. And I know there's other people that have also mentioned before that they would like to have some sort of like an online course. And so I'm in the process of trying to figure out what exactly should the content be about, right? Because the book it's very broad. There's like 12 principles, and many of them are life principles. There's mindset, there's habits. And so I have to hone in exactly on what people want. And so that's my next step, to figure that out and to offer a mastermind, offer an online course, so I can take the platform to the next level. And then after that, I might write another book. I might make it into a series.
Yeah. Well, I'm on your mailing list now, and I'll keep a very close watch on it. And I wish you very good luck with that.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And I invite everybody to check the book out. It's
I was going to ask the same thing. Sorry to interrupt, but what is the best place to find you, and what is the best place to find your book?
So the best place to find me is logratodream.com.
I will link it in the show notes.
And then for the book, you can find it at logratodream.com/AmazonBook. Okay. So logratodream.com/AmazonBook. We'll take you straight to Amazon, so you can get the book. It's out in audio and also in Kindle. And actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm launching the paperback version. So I'll have a physical version of the book. So I invite you guys to check it out. Let me know what you think. And then also, if you're interested in tuning into the podcast, you can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. Search Logra to Dream, or if not, you go logratodream.com/iTunes or logratodream.com/Android for the podcast.
Great. I will link them all up in the show notes. Arturo, thank you so much for joining me today.
No, Rohit, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and best of luck with your podcast. I really like what you're doing. And really, it's all about inspiring this great immigrant community that we have here in the United States that are creating just so much value and bringing so many ideas. And I mean, there's so many great people out there in all communities, right? In the Indian community, how many super successful people have come from that community? So so I congratulate you on what you're doing, and thank you very much for having you on.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
Thanks for joining in, guys. And that was Arturo Nava for you. What a guy and what a passion, I must say. So if you got anything out of this show, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher at breakingtheborders.com/iTunes/Stitcher. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to my newsletter as well. And reach out to me, reach out to the guest. Let me know if this was helpful for you. And if you find anyone who is appropriate for the show as a guest, let me know as well. Thank you.